Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait, wait. Oh, 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 oh.
Shall I pretend that I'm Gene Kelly and I've just finished a fantastic dance on the Late Late Movie with Frank Sinatra and Rudy Valentino? You know, speaking of the Late Late Movie, I don't know how often it must occur to you. I presume it occurs to you occasionally, but it certainly occurs to me occasionally. Not more than occasionally, I will admit. But has it ever really hit you in the middle of a very, just an ordinary moment? Have you ever thought of dividing your life into you know, the kind of pie diagram they have, say, in the business pages of the New York Times or the Herald Tribune? You know, it says where your tax dollar goes, and it says for defense, 67.5%. And then there's a big pie sliced out of there, and then it says for governmental operations expenses, 32.5%. Then there's another slice, miscellaneous, and so forth. Well, have you ever thought of dividing your life up like that? You know, can you imagine just what your life would look like? It says your life, and there it is, it's a pie. And it says how you spend your daily day, 8 hours a day, see? And then there's a big slice out. It says 3.5 hours sleeping. And that's taken out, see? That's a slice out. Then there's a gigantic slice, a big one, see? It says fooling around, big slice out. And then there's another slice that's about, say, 7.5% frittering. And then another one, another 16.5% phoning it up, trying to pretend that you're doing something great. And then there's a little wee tiny slit that says doing something. And that's a little very thin one, you see. And it says this one subject to change without notice, sometimes disappears completely from one week to the next. And then, no, seriously, have you ever wondered about? And then there's another little tiny, yeah, then there's another slice there. It's a pretty big slice. It just says scut. That's doing all the stuff like shaving. And have you ever noticed that the guys on the TV commercials are all deliriously happy doing scut? Shows a guy shaving, and he's got this big grin. Oh, I love this shave. He's scraping those whiskers off, and his skin is big. I love it. And then another typical commercial is the wild, friend, almost unbelievably manic, happy look on the face of these chicks who are doing the washing. Oh, boy. Oh, pigs here, yeah. Yeah, what's the dollar? I see. You see? Oh, you figure that that money makes anything good. Well, you know, it is an interesting thing now. And here was what occurred to me today. I'm sitting there, you know, and there's a slight rain coming down. Somehow a slight rain coming down in October. You know, October is a strangely swinging month. I hope you realize that October has bugged artists ever since the beginning of time. Thomas Wolfe wrote endless stuff about October. This is the month, October. October is probably the most exciting month. Now, it isn't necessarily the month that, April, on the one hand, is another kind of exciting month in a very different way. But October is here, you know, it really is here. And even as I watch the World Series, I can't even get interested in it. Because, yeah, there's something that happens when you watch the World Series games. It's as though the season is over. Now, get out of my way, will you, Bobby Richardson? I've had enough of this non-swearing, drinking pop and all that stuff. Now, you know, somehow you want to clear the decks. Come on, let's get it over with. All right, come on. Why don't you guys give it to the Yankees and let's all go home and get back to... Get out of my way. Come on. Stengel, will you please stay out of our hair for crying out loud? We'll hear enough of you from next year on, you know. All this stuff here. You just can't get it out of here. I'm really watching with great interest what's going to happen over the year. Did you hear? Casey Stengel in a moment of almost unbelievable candor? The last game the Mets had managed to win. I think they won their last game, didn't they, against the Cubs? Or did the Cubs win the last game? Who knows? I mean, there is a true study of futility. The Cubs are in ninth place. The Mets are in tenth. And it's the last game of the season, and they're playing it out in Wrigley Field, in the home, the gigantic monument to gum chewing. And yes, that's Wrigley Field. That's the stadium that gum poppers built. Well, it's true. All those little secretaries popping their gum up and down Wacker Boulevard and on Michigan Avenue, it built that stadium. So there they are playing away. It's too bad that they never. I don't know what it is with the unimaginative cameramen who do television broadcasts on baseball. I'm serious. Now, like yesterday, when the Giants beat the Dodgers in that final playoff game, they didn't even think to take one shot of the defeated Dodgers going into their dugout, which would be unbelievably more dramatic than the Giants jumping around all over each other, because you knew what they would be doing. You know, they'd be hitting each other and hollering and throwing their caps up in the air. But what about these guys who had been leading the National League almost from the very beginning of the year, and suddenly down the drain it all goes, just like that. And not one shot. I kept saying, let's take a look at what the Dodgers do, you know. But not one shot. They didn't bother to cut once, not even once, to that dugout. Now, and then there was another error, I think, on the part of most, I don't know what these television directors who do baseball games, I guess these are guys who do, are converted guys who used to do, I would guess, roughly toothpaste commercials. You know, because here, for example, how many of you have ever seen Candlestick Park? You have. Well, I haven't. I never saw Candlestick Park. And, you know, I keep trying to peek around the edge of the screen to look at the park, and they never show you the park. They show you a little bit of the crowd. I'm not talking about the crowd. The heck with the crowd. The crowd looks exactly like a crowd looks anywhere else. And one little quick shot, he says, there's the bay out there. Well, the reason that they had the bay in the shot was because they were taking a shot of something else, and the bay got in there. Somebody hit a foul ball, and he says, there's the bay back there. There's the bay. But they didn't take you all around and show you the park and show you the hills back of the thing and the ocean and all that stuff. They don't give you a setting, in other words. Now, they were even worse in Dodger, whatever that stadium they called the Dodger Stadium. What is it, Chavez Ravine or something? But they never showed you at all what that place looked like, and it's a new ballpark. They didn't show you that a bit. Once in a while, you'd see the scoreboard out there. Have you noticed that ball teams have taken to putting commercials in the middle of their game to let you know you're seeing something great? You know, those things that they flash up on the scoreboard, you know, it says, Mickey Mantle is a great player, and he has just stolen his seventh base. Hooray for Mickey. Well, you know, it's so silly, all this stuff. And they do, they'll say such a thing like, Charlie Brown, playing right field for the Chicago White Sox, has hit in three straight games. Charlie Brown is also a great fielder and has not made an error in over 2 weeks.
And Charlie is looking. It's as though there's a continual running commercial, even though your head is asleep because the game is so boring and that nothing is happening. It's a continual running commercial to let you know you're seeing something great, and don't you forget it. So that thing keeps popping up. They have a giant one in Dodger Stadium. I think it stretches over the whole outfield. Did you see that? They call it Sportsogram out there now to let you know what you're seeing. Of course, baseball is roughly getting to the point now, I say, where wrestling was just about the time Jim Londos was ready to hang up his shoes and quit. I almost said something else that he hung up there. But nevertheless, it was just about, you know, I have a feeling that in about 3 or 4 years, it's going to be a giant road show. They're going to play 400 games a year. They'll be playing in the wintertime in big air-conditioned places, and they'll make the trip all around. Mickey Mantle will come out there. And music will play every time a guy comes up to bat. They do that already in Cincinnati now, you know. Oh, yeah, a guy gets to bat, and the music will... And there comes the ball... Whoop! And he takes a swing, and the music goes, and then he crouches down there. They produce it like they produce Naked City. Of course, they have a little trouble with the plot, because usually in the last inning, the bad guys out in Cincinnati recently have won, which is not really the way it's supposed to be. But what I was trying to get on with there, I'm sorry I got thrown into baseball. We're not talking about baseball here tonight at all. I'm sitting there, and it's raining, and it's October, and all of a sudden it occurs to me what a great thing it is just to be alive at this moment. All this wild stuff going on, and even the stuff that is ridiculous in its seriousness has a certain amount of excitement about it. I feel sorry for people who continually get bowed down by the troubles of the world, because they don't seem to realize that trouble is the lot of man, and he better even enjoy the trouble that's happening. You know? I'm sorry, that's just the way it is, and it's not going to go away. It just ain't going to go away.
One of the great things about Americans is they really do feel that life is like a giant slate, an enormous blackboard, and it's got all kinds of bad stuff written all over it, and we're all given erasers. And as we work very hard, we can finally get that whole board erased, and it'll be a clean blackboard, and then we can start building a real life then, you see. It's a very fascinating thing. And yet all the while, we're constantly being bitten by the hounds of hell that are nipping at our hocks. We can't figure it out. Well, we thought we had everything cleared away. I mean, the General Motors stock is going up again. What is all this trouble? Well, you know, that brings up another, just a little side issue. I'm watching the ball game, and I'm continually fascinated by the great difference that exists in our lives between reality, the thing that we live, and the thing that we claim is, which we have in our books, our art forms and plays and movies and so on. And you'll see it even in commercials. Probably in commercials you'll see it more than anything else, because commercials really, in a way, are much more the statement of the American dream, almost the epitome of the American dream. Whereas often a play is quite often is, in a sense, digging underneath it, is not necessarily stating it. Well, here I'm watching a commercial. I don't know whether you saw this commercial. It was one of the funniest commercials I've ever seen. It shows the usual blonde, sharp, clean, dynamic-looking young American housewife. You know the kind they call the young marrieds? The young marrieds. Here's one of the young marrieds, a born Pepsi-Cola drinker. You know, the kind that's already got her cemetery lot all bought and paid for. It's all okay. And so she's sitting there, and she's writing a letter to one of her friends. And she's sitting at the desk, you see. And you hear this voice, and it's her voice talking over the screen. And it says, "Dear Martha, I'm sorry that I haven't been able to answer your letter, but as you can tell, we're certainly having a lot of excitement here at home. Now, you probably wonder why I'm writing to you on motel stationery. Well, let me tell you what happened. It was a very, very exciting and a very scary thing happened the other day. I was in the kitchen, and little Jimmy was there in his crib, and the maid was in there doing the dishes, when all of a sudden, I smelled smoke. I could smell smoke coming through there. Well, I looked up, and there it was. There was a fire going on in the bedroom. Well, I'll tell you, I saw immediately what was happening. There was a fire going... I know, show. It's all right. There was a fire going on in the bedroom. Well, what do you think I did? The first thing I did was to call my friendly, reliable insurance man. The house is burning up, and she's calling the insurance man. And it shows, you know, it shows a shot of her picking up the phone, and the smoke is pouring out of the bedroom, and she's calling the insurance man. Well, let me tell you. And in the meantime, in the background, you see the maid carrying the kid out, and she's calling the insurance man. She said, the first thing I did was call the insurance man, and the fire is now raging out of control. Yes, sirree. Then there's a quick cut and says, he certainly knew what to do. And he was here in a thrice. And there you see the insurance man. Never once do you see the fire engines. You don't see any of this stuff. It's the insurance man there, you see. And in the last scene, she's living in the motel. He took care of the motel, the whole business, and now it's all happily ever aftersville. Well, you know, I'm sitting there, and I'm fascinated by this. What seems to be all the hang-up? Come on, tell me what the hang-up is. We'll get it all straightened out. No hang-up? All right, fine. So I'm fascinated by this. I wonder... I guess most people figure if they're insured, that the disaster that they're insured against won't happen. And if it does happen, there won't be much of a disaster, actually. That somehow, if you come, they'll take care. Oh, speaking of disasters, this is WOR, AM and FM, New York. That's what's worrying them all in there? What is it with these guys? I guess it's Ted again. Well, I know what happens when you shave too close. This is WOR, AM and FM, New York, and we'll be here. Yeah, we'll be here until we'll be here till midnight. You're getting funnier all along. Well, while we're on the subject of funny business, oh, you got a note there? Oh, very good. All right, you put the bulletin on, Ted. I don't want to interrupt operations here. Go ahead, put it on there.
Thank you, Gene. Here's a traffic bulletin from the WOR newsroom. Auto traffic on the Manhattan Bridge has been disrupted because of an accident. A tractor-trailer struck a steel girder and jackknifed onto the BMT subway tracks. The driver, unidentified, was killed, and his assistant was injured. The lower level of the bridge has been closed to traffic in both directions. And on the upper level, there's only traffic going to Brooklyn. No traffic going to Manhattan. Subway service is normal. Trains were routed through the tubes under the East River. Repeating this traffic bulletin, because of a truck accident, the Manhattan Bridge is closed to Manhattan-bound traffic, but Brooklyn-bound traffic is being permitted on the Manhattan Bridge's upper level. Stay tuned here to 710 for further details. Gene, it's all yours.
Thank you, Ted. I feel properly put my place there. Well, now while we're on the subject of being put in our place... Oh, my. It's funny, you know? I'm sorry. But I think, though, that if we... if we... I just can't help it. You know, on the subject of being caught in a gigantic vice... It is getting very funny. And I'll tell you, the world that we live in is, I think, is one of the most amusing. Certainly, there is no excuse ever to be bored in this existence. That is the one thing you can't be. If you're bored, you're just somehow, you have allowed the scales to grow over your eyeballs. And you have allowed the potatoes to grow in your ears. Because all you've got to do is just look around and listen for any 30-second period of the day, and you just can't help but be, well, just blow your gasket. Sometimes you just fall right out of your swinging chair, you know, land on your head and the whole business, knock your no-cal over, just laughing with the way it is. Like today, I'm walking past a building. I don't know whether you've noticed this new phenomenon that's developed. I'm walking past a building that they're putting up on 57th Street. Now, it's just a building, just one of those ordinary buildings. But in front of the building now, they have erected about 47 gigantic signs all along 57th Street. And the signs are name credits. You see, buildings are not real anymore. They're shows. Buildings are an adjunct of show business and the fantasy and the dream. You don't really think that those buildings that they're building along Park Avenue are real, do you? All those glass buildings? I mean, they're not going to be there for more than 10 minutes. The curtain's going to go down, and they're going to build another one there. You know that. And probably they'll be designed by Tennessee Williams, too. I believe there'll be a building named Blanche Dubois or Stanley Kowalski. There'll be an angry building, and there'll be hip buildings. And there'll be, sure, I think so, there'll be conservative buildings, and there'll be Democratic buildings. And, of course, then there'll be radical buildings on the far... And then there'll be beatnik buildings, the whole thing, hip buildings, the whole thing is going to happen. And now we have now the showbiz building. Well, I notice I'm looking up these signs, see, and the signs have on them pictures of people looking at the signs. Have you seen those? They're cutouts of people looking at the signs. And each sign is a kind of big name credit, you know, like they put on the front of movies. It says, for example, Vinyl Flooring by Murphy. And, you know, everybody says, it shows a crowd applauding Murphy. You see, he's putting the vinyl flooring in there. And then the next one says, Elevator Shaft, by Francis M. Cochran and Sons. Well, of course, there's a big crowd there applauding the elevator shaft that Francis M. Cochran and Sons are putting in. Then there's the one that says, John's, by Mr. Fixture. And, of course, there's a big cheer for that one. And then there's another one that says, Fixtures, by Mr. John. And, of course, there's another big cheer for that. Now, I'm telling you, all along there, it's name credit, you see. And I'm realizing now that buildings, I suppose there'll be, you know, there'll be leaks by nature. There'll be another, you see. And then there'll be one that undoubtedly that will say something like, eventually, it'll have to happen, of course. Depreciation by time, Inc. All along there, the big name credits. And, of course, I went past there, and the name credits were so important and so beautiful that I had to applaud. I just automatically my hands went up, because as soon as I see names going before my eyes, I applaud, you know, as well. It wasn't 20 minutes later, I'm in a delicatessen buying a salami, a kosher salami, and by George, there, the rabbi had gotten a name credit. Right there on the kosher salami was the rabbi's name. Rabbi E.M. Goldstein was getting a name credit there on the Hebrew National salami that I bought. Yeah, he was there, and you know, I wonder whether he had an agent handle that deal. You know, and make sure that he got his name in type larger than the ingredients,
but yet smaller than the, you know. So I applauded, you know, of course, when I cut into the salami. And then I as I'm sitting there eating my salami sandwich, I began to envision what must be the next step. I think Gothic music would do this, Eddie. I began to envision the next step. Since everything is becoming showbiz and everyone needs name credits, have you seen the dairy now? You get the can of milk, you know, this big quart container, and it says milk from Green Hills Dairy with love. Well, now that's all right. It is, you see, it isn't your friendly, reliable, sober, industrious, clean-shaven milkman that loves you. It's the corporation that loves you. It's all part of show business. And I feel a little warm by it. And I think that the next thing we're going to see is the showbiz funeral. It's got to come. I can just see the man laid out there, stretched out, see? And there in front of him, in little luminescent letters, are the credits. Hairpiece by Fred of the Ritz. Suit by Robert Hall. Shirts by Arrow. Smile by Roberto. Makeup by Pierce Westmore. Death by God. Oh, in hoc, oh, auricula conch, in esk, spittle lauk. And so, passing from one act, man passeth into the next act. Indeed, to the applause, to the roars of the assembled multitude, I suspect that from now on, the congregation will be known as the audience. And I look forward, very frankly and honestly, to the day when Variety and Billboard will cover... And in keeping with the same problem, I see a lovely little advertisement which I think should be read to you to the sound of the music of the ages. Thank you. It comes from a suburban newspaper of Lower Montgomery County and northeastern Philadelphia, just outside the city of brotherly love. This is your invitation to attend Murchison and Sons Open House. Tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And Sunday, 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. Beginning at 10 a.m. tomorrow, Open House will be held at Murchison and Sons' newly redecorated and remodeled funeral home in Jenkintown. You are most cordially invited to attend our gala opening. Courteous attendance will be on hand Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to conduct all visitors through the entire funeral home, pointing out its various modern features and answering any questions which may be asked. There will be souvenirs and gifts for the ladies. Yes, friends, this will be an ideal opportunity for you to inspect all of the facilities of a truly modern, truly beautiful memory garden funeral home under ideal conditions. Such an opportunity may never again present itself to you. Make plans now to attend this unique event. We'll look forward to seeing you. We'll look forward to seeing you. La-da-do, la-da-do. And now the audience will join me in singing Invictus non angricular conch in est spittle alp. You all know the words. Now look, don't come around here and say that I'm making fun of death, because you know I'm going to go too. You know, that's a funny thing how some people don't realize that we're all involved. Very, very interesting. It's a fascinating phenomenon. I'm serious about it. I kind of wonder what the gala gifts will be. I wonder what the souvenirs will be. And I particularly like that one phrase, which I think sums it all up. It is an opportunity for you to inspect all the facilities under ideal conditions. I guess ideal conditions are while you're alive. I imagine there are other conditions under which you will probably be asked to. You know, I'll tell you, we're living in great times, and I can't now. Don't think that I'm putting it down. I'll tell you, I'm part of it, and I dig it the most. I'll tell you what we're developing. I think one of the things that we are developing more than anything else, we're developing secret people. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the secret people, you know, the guys who at the age of 7 take the vows. It's a very strange phenomenon, which I don't know whether you're familiar with it, because a lot of people have never really run into this. There is a kind of monastic vow that certain people take. Now, how they take it and what makes them do it, no one quite knows. But one day they feel, well, I'll tell you what it is, just wait, you know. You're one of those people who want Herman Melville to get to the point of it right away in the first chapter so that you can go back to your little knitting. Well, you just ain't going to get it from me, Dad. I'm not your dish of tea. I'm not a one-liner. You see, that's another thing. The world of the one-liner is one of the most insidious worlds, because the one-liner is also the world of the one-half idea. There's no such thing as a one-liner that ever really says anything, so forget that. But nevertheless, now, come on, now, please, you're bugging me and you're causing trouble tonight. I'm really fascinated by the thing that I've observed among the secret people. I want to get on with this secret people thing, because it deserves to be explored. Because in the end, you know, the secret people are the guys that get shot out of the orbit. They are. The secret people are the guys that build the things that finally will blow up all of Australia. Very interesting people, the secret ones. And a couple of nights ago, I think I have the letter here. So just hold on. I think I have a letter here from a lady who talks about this. She says, I'm really scared about this because you said it, and I think I've got one of these things growing in my house. Well, I don't know. See, there again, I've left the proper material behind, which somehow makes me very, very harmless. I'll never blow anything up because I'm never prepared. But nevertheless, the secret people, that's all right, doesn't matter, because I can paraphrase what she said. I want to explain to you, in case you didn't hear the show, what the secret people are. Oh, by the way, do you know that there's an IBM Country Club? Just thought you ought to know. And the IBM Country Club is having an art show, and instead of their art show, I'd like to have the IBM Country Club kind of have an art show for, you know, paintings that think. I think it would be kind of nice. But actually, they have a show called Presentation of Original Coherent Paintings. I don't know quite what a coherent painting is. I've had a little trouble. Do you think Norman Rockwell's paintings are coherent? I mean, don't confuse the graphic quality with coherency. But nevertheless, the secret people. Oh, yes. I don't know how to approach this, because the secret people don't like to be uncovered. But out there in the darkness right now, there probably are a half a dozen of them listening. And they know who they are. Their friends and neighbors know who they are, but don't know much about them. Secret people are people who are literally that. Now, I'm not talking about introverts. I'm not talking about people who sit in the corners during dances. I'm not talking about the people who don't ever get invited to stuff. I'm not talking about the pimply 97-pound winkling, you know, the kind of guy who sends away for the thing that's going to make the muscles there. That is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the kind of guy
when he's 7 or 8 or maybe 9 years old, retires from the normal relationships that everybody else has, and he goes down into the basement and stands next to the workbench and starts to make things. Now, quite often he will become an electronic bug. Very often he will wind up, when he's 49 years old, carving a model of the Taj Mahal out of halva, something like that. Now there is a guy who never quite, you see, he had trouble with his knee somewhere along the line, and he never got to be Oppenheimer. You see, he just somewhere, Oppenheimer is the prime example of one who really made it. Oppenheimer, you prefer that? Well, I will give you both pronunciations. It really matter. The point is, you know who I'm talking about, and that's what's important. I suppose, though, to other people, it's how you say something that's more important. That is another kind of secret person who spends all of his life worrying about commas and all of his life worrying about capitals, and all the while he doesn't realize he's editing Mein Kampf. You see? Yeah. And when they are marching past the house, they said, "What is all this stuff going on here?" And I said, "Well, that's that book that you edited, Charlie. It's that thing called Mein Kampf." He said, "That book had very bad punctuation. Let me tell you about that in the second chapter." Boom! Well, all right. Nevertheless, the secret people are people whom I've had relationships with all my life because I started out as one. I know about them. I cannot tell you how at one point in my life I not only played second base, but after I would finish playing second base, I would come home and I would read articles on how to wind electromagnets that appeared in Boy's Life magazine. Now, I cannot tell you why this happened. It happened to you, didn't it, Ed? And I started out, now I'll tell you exactly what happened to me. I started out one day. How this happened? Oh, I cannot tell you. It left an indelible scar on my life. Some guys never get over the scar. But there was an article that said, make your own electromagnet. Get 14 million feet of number 18 wire. This can be gotten from the field coil of an old dynamic speaker, which you can find in any basement, any place. Well, of course, that's the kind of leading statements which are totally untrue to begin with. You cannot find the dynamic speaker in the basement that easy. And who knows what number 18 wire is? So you have to decipher the whole business, you see. So I'm asking my old man right away, what is number 18 wire? And the old man says, well, that's wire. And I said, well, what does the 18 mean? He says, well, that means 18 feet. And I see he's ad-libbing. I did not realize till years later that my old man's entire life was ad-libbed on an enormous catalog of misinformation. All the way through his life, he misunderstood how they figured 616 tires. He did not know what the 600 and the 16 meant. He did not know how they figure horsepower, but he was quick to tell you. If you ask him, he would tell you all about it. So I said to my old man, what is 18, number 18 wire? He said, well, you see, that doesn't mean number. That little thing there, that little cross thing, that little thing that looks like a tic-tac-toe mark, what that really means is, that means 18 feet of wire. I said, well, Dad, what is a field coil? Oh, he says, a field coil. Well, that's the kind of wire that you find out in the fields. He says, you know, when you're walking around out there and a lot of time you run across barbed wire, well, that's called field wire. It's, you know, sometimes all coiled up. You know, it gets all coiled up. People tangle it all up. Well, that's field coil. So I said, oh, you mean I can go out in the vacant lot out by Flicks and I can find that? It's that kind of wire that you find in the bushes? He says, yes, that's field coil. And I said, well, what is a speaker? He said, oh, well, a speaker, that's a speaker. Well, that's people get up and they talk. Also, a speaker is a loudspeaker in your radio. He said, that really doesn't have anything to do with it. You can also find that kind of wire, I guess, in the speakers, but it's really field wire. So I'm out there looking for this field. Well, of course, it took me about 9 months to decipher the article when I finally got away from my old man. And Mr. Melton down at school told me about it. And I started out to build this electromagnet. Let me tell you what happened. What you did was to take nails. You took three nails. Well, I had plenty of nails because I spent the first 10 years of my life stealing nails from houses they were building. Now, yeah, I stole probably 4,000 pounds of nails in my time. I'd like to know how many pounds of tar paper I stole in my time. You know what is a tar paper? I would also like to know how many feet of scrap 2x4 that I stole. You know where the carpenters would cut off the end and they'd leave these all piled up to take home? Oh, let me tell you. So nails were no problem. So I go down, I get some nails. Now, here's exactly how you made this wire. In case your kids are interested, here's how you make an electromagnet. I took this wire. And then it said to take some masking tape. Well, tape I had. So you take this paper tape and you wind it around there. That is the insulation. Now, on the wire, it says on the wire, on this thing then, you begin to wind in layers. You begin to wind this number 18 wire, which is like horsehair wire, very thin wire. See, you wind it. Then you wind it back the other way. You wind it. Until finally, you get this all wound up. You got a big thing. It looks like a spool of wire. And then it says you can connect this to a 1.5-volt dry cell battery, and presto, change-o, it will pick up things like pins, it will pick up things like other nails, and you have a magnet, see? Well, I hooked this thing up, and I was astounded, absolutely gassed. It worked. It picked up all kinds of stuff. I'll tell you, my old man, his glasses flew right off when he saw this. This is the first time that, you see, my old man was deeply rooted in another century. I don't know what century it was, but it wasn't any century that was around our house. And when this thing worked, he was amazed. I made an electromagnet. Within 3 weeks, the rumor had spread all over town that I was about to become an electrical engineer because the old man told them all down at the bowling alley. I'm telling you the truth about this. Do you know that they still believe in my hometown where I came from that I became an atomic physicist? Seriously, all on the basis of this electromagnet. Well, anyway, I made this electromagnet and it was a gas. Well, of course, from that time on, I was gone. I mean, but somehow something went out of second base. It really did. And I went down to the library, and they had a thing called the Boy's Life. What did they call this thing? It was real big, thick, and blue. It was about 3 inches thick. It was published by the publishers of Boy's Life magazine. It was a big compendium on how to make all kinds of jazz. And so I rushed down there, and I got this thing, you see. And I was really hooked because in the back of Boy's Life, it says, be sure, kids, to order your copy of the gigantic Boy's Life compendium on how to make everything. Well, I never ordered a book. I just went down to the library and asked for this. Well, Mrs. Easter had this monster. Well, I brought it home, and it was worse than... I didn't know until years later it was worse than my old man. This thing was ad-lib from beginning to end. Well, anyway, that was enough to get me started. And it says how to make a simple one-tube radio receiver. Well, now, it had all kinds of tubes like UV-30. It had a tube called a 30 tube. Well, I said to my old man, where do I get a 30 tube? Well, how do you get a 30 tube? He says, tubes are very expensive. There's very expensive tubes. And I immediately, you know, I have a kid mind. Immediately, my mind flips over and I have a scheme on how to get tubes. Let me tell you, kid, on how to get tubes, if you want to get radio tubes. We pulled this racket for about, for about 3 months. Me and three other kids who were hooked on this kind of jazz. Three other secret kids. We went to all the radio repair shops in town. We'd go to places like sporting goods stores, you know, where they sold radio tubes and all that. And they had a tube tester. It says, test your own tubes. We test tubes free here. You know, that kind of thing. Raytheon said all over the thing. We would go in there, and we would go up to the guy and say, do you have any bad radio tubes that you're going to throw away, that you're going to throw out? Because we want to use the tube bases. You see, our Boy Scout troop is raising money to send a missionary to Abyssinia. And we know a place where you can sell 14,000 tube bases for $1. And we're working for the Boy Scout troop. Well, these guys would give us all these burned-out radio tubes, except that most of them weren't burned out, you know. They had low emission, which I had never heard of at that point. If a tube lit up, it was good, as far as I was concerned. I couldn't figure out why half of the things I built would never stop regenerating. Took me 19 years to figure that one out. So anyway, I wound up with all kinds, bags full of tubes, all kinds of tubes. And I kept doing this until one day I got a 30 tube in the lot. Well, now I'm in business. And it says, it told how to wind a coil on a tube base. And it told how you had to have a condenser, a 140 micro-microfarad condenser, variable condenser. So I asked my old man what these little M's were. And he says, M's. Well, that means that's a clearing of the throat sign. It says after that you go oomph. I said, well, it says a 140 one. He says, well, that's the wattage. I said, the what? He says, well, that is the wattage, you see. Like on the light bulbs, it's a 60 watt, and so that's the wattage of the condenser there. I says, well, what is a condenser, Dad? He says, well, a condenser, the only condensers my old man had ever heard of were the kind that they used to make home brew. That's another kind of a condenser. And he was trying to figure it out. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, I finally scraped together enough parts to build this radio, and I hooked it up. Well, of course, it didn't work.
That does not stop anyone. I can tell you this, that does not stop. It only infuriates you because now the tube lights, but it doesn't work. And you keep fooling around with your earphones that your uncle gave you, and you keep hearing popping sounds, and then you poke it in, and all of a sudden, BOW! Fantastic shock on both of your ears you get. Well, now that is even better than if it worked. And so, slowly but surely, you began to become one of the secret people. You're down in the basement making stuff. Well, I want to tell you one of the greatest experiences that ever happened to me in my life. This is one of those things that even now when I think back, you know, most of us have an experience or two that when we think back on it, we have this warm feeling of something really warm that really happened. Well, we discovered old radio, secondhand radio shops. I wonder how many guys that are listening out there when they were kids spent all of their Saturdays, Ed, making the trek to Cortlandt Street. And going through all the old, used, rotten, junk radio shops that line these places. I mean, it was, believe me, it was the equivalent, it was the kid equivalent, the electronic kid equivalent of skin diving. You never knew what you were going to discover, and everything you discovered was wondrous, great, fantastic, unbelievable. And you would just look at endless supplies of barrels full of stuff. Wonderful radio parts. You remember that excitement, Ed, of just going through there? And, of course, you got about 40 cents in your pocket. And what you're looking for, an 8 microfarad filter condenser is what you're looking for. But you spend all day looking at everything. All kinds of wild stuff. All kinds of great and beautiful things that you'll never be able to, like Thordarson power transformers from Stuart Warner radios, you know, that kind of stuff. 2.5-volt filament transformers with a fully shielded case. You just look at that thing and your mouth waters. I can't explain it to you. I just can't tell you what radio parts mean to some guys. I mean, radio parts to some guys are the equivalent of what that centerfold out is to Playboy readers. It's unbelievable excitement. Well, one time we find it. Well, that's for another day and another time. But I can tell you this, that once you get sucked into that world, there is never any turning back, ever. It just draws you closer and closer until finally one day, you cannot walk past, for example, now a capsule. I went over to the show here where they had the space capsule. What do you think I was looking at? I was looking at the electronic circuits in there, and I was examining all that stuff, and I was thinking, well, look at those beautiful resistors, Ed. I'll bet those things have less than 10% tolerance. Let me tell you, boy, look at those beautiful, look at those printed circuits. And I just stood there and I forgot all about John Glenn. And all I could see was Hugo Gernsback.